Well, hello there, and welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast, the podcast that supports everybody in the realm of special education. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. In this episode, we are going to discuss the five P's to an IEP. We didn't think we could get more acronyms, right? So we're going to talk about parental input, present levels, progress, and providers and service hours. Whether you're new to special education or an experienced advocate, this episode will offer you some insights and strategies to help in your world of special education. Before we begin, a quick word from our sponsor, Learning Essentials. They are a team of specialized educators with advanced degrees dedicated to bridging learning gaps through dyslexia intervention, strategic writing instruction, and executive function support. Check out the link in the show notes for more information on how Learning Essentials can support your kiddo's educational journey. I do have a huge, huge favor to ask. If you don't mind, hit that like, follow, and share button. Your support means the world to me. And let's keep that conversation going by joining me over on Instagram at Learning Essentials. Now let's dive into those five P's. The first one, parental input. In some districts and states, they are going to reach out to you as a parent and say, we have an IEP coming. Please fill out this form. We want to hear from you. In IDEA, a parent has the right to put in their input, and however that input gets to the school and to the IEP, let's make sure that happens. So if you have to bring it, if you have to email it, make sure that it's in writing and request that it goes into the parent input section of your child's IEP. Why does that matter? Well, you as the parent are that most consistent person at the IEP table, whether you change schools, districts, move, whatever the case may be, you are going to be that strong advocate and you know your baby best. When we think about writing a parent input statement, I want you to think about reflecting on that past IEP cycle. What has worked? What did not work? What can be done differently? Once you've thought about those things, I want you to think about, where do you see your kiddo in the future? Where does your kiddo see themselves in the future? What are their goals? What are their intentions? Depending on their age, that question may be a little bit easier to answer. But even if they're little, where do you see them in a couple of years? Where do you see them transitioning to the next school level? What does that independence look like for them in the future? So every kid, that independence meter is going to be very different. Some kiddos, maybe living at home is their level of independence. And if they can successfully make a meal for themselves, that is fabulous. Some kiddos may be living outside independently in more of a traditional manner. But what that looks like for your kid and what you feel like they are to be able to do so that they can be as successful as possible. And starting that conversation with the IEP team so that you can start to look at what resources are available, either at a school level, a city level, district level, state level, so that you can help guide them to future independence, employment, and education. When we think about IDEA, it's really a forward-thinking law. It is what is the educational impact for a student? Again, I said educational, not academic. So what is that cognitive, processing, memory, and attention, social, emotional, physical, sensory, movement, function, communication? What does that look like, and how can we start to build the capacity of our students for that future independence, employment, and education of what it's going to look like? So taking all of that information, capturing it in a document that you can then put in that IEP as your parent input statement, so that we can start building goals around it, so we can reach resources, so that we can ensure that we are, again, building that capacity for your child, for themselves, so that they can have that future success. The school is also going to create their present level, the current performance of that student. Part of that is teacher input. So if you are in a middle school or a high school and you have multiple teachers, those teachers should be filling out some type of form to gather input of that student as it aligns with their IEP, their learning needs, their educational performance. And then from there, as a parent, you can request to see those. That way, you as a parent can be informed, although you've had this communication, I hope, throughout the school year with your child's teacher or teachers, and that you're aware of what's working and what's not working. But also, that input is really going to give you some great insight. So, for example, if you see something from an English teacher and it says, the student does a great job of telling me why in their writing, but they have a hard time telling me the how part. You as a parent, even though, yes, a special education teacher, the person that's writing the IEP should see this as well, but it's good for you to be informed so you can say, hey, listen, I think there should be an IEP goal about how to extract more information from that writing of my child, right? And so that present level should talk about the current performance. It's going to have lots of data in there, and also anecdotal notes on that teacher input form that may or may not be transferred to that present level. But taking all of that information, so your parent input statement, the present level of performance, that then leads us to the third P, our progress. The progress is going to be in SMART goals and accommodations. So the purpose of a SMART goal is to create clear and specific objectives that are achievable and measurable. And that acronym, SMART, stands for specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. So now we know that as we're looking at that student the past year, what's worked, what's not worked, what can we do to support this student for the future, any insights and observations that teachers have seen of what's working well, what they still need to work on, putting all of that into saying, okay, here are our pockets of vulnerability. Here are the skills that we still are lacking that we need to be able to access the curriculum and develop in that skill area. And so we are going to be specific in that goal area. So ensuring that your goals should be clear and well-defined, stating exactly what it is to be accomplished, that they're measurable. So goals should include that criteria for measuring progress and determining when that goal has been achieved. That way, even as a parent, when you get those quarterly progress reports, you have a clear understanding of, yes, my kiddo has achieved this goal, or yes, they're still working on it, and this is where we are, because you're going to have very specific information, it's going to be measurable, and everybody's going to be on the same page. It also needs to be achievable, meaning it needs to be realistic, it needs to be attainable, and considering the resources and time that are available that align with free and appropriate education. Also relevant, goals should align with the broader objectives of the individual, and then they should have a specific time frame for completion. Again, keeping everybody organized and everybody knowing what they will be working on to support a student. So by setting those SMART goals, educators can effectively plan and track progress towards the objectives, whether it's for a student learning outcome or any other area of focus. I will say there are times that even as a parent, if you look at an IEP, when you get that draft, as you are entitled to having the draft IEP prior to the IEP meeting, I want you to look at the goals. Are they broken down enough? Is it too general? There's times and time again that I see goals that I go ahead and make a recommendation that we split them into two goals, right? So if it's executive function and we've put into one goal, knowing what to do, organizing what to do, and completing it, that's a lot of objectives to cover. And really for some students, they need to be broken out. So it could be one goal of just knowing what the assignments are, prioritizing the assignments, and organizing them in a manner. And then it could be a second goal of actually completing the work. So really depending on that student, depending on where their needs occur, but really being thoughtful. And that's where that parent input statement is incredibly important. And the progress notes from teachers is important to really come together to say, all right, how can we tweak areas and make sure that we're really writing thoughtful goals and not just a generic drop-down goal. The second part that we are talking about with the P's, with the progress, is accommodations, right? So not everything is going to be a goal. Accommodations can vary widely depending on that student's needs and include things like extended time on tests, preferential seating, use of assistive technology, modified assignments. So the goal of accommodations is to provide students with tools and support they need to succeed academically without fundamentally altering the content or the standard of the curriculum. So accommodations are typically outlined in a student's IEP. You can also find accommodations in a student's 504 plan, and they are intended to help students overcome those barriers to learning and demonstrate their ability to the fullest extent possible. Again, have that thoughtful conversation. Preferential seating does not always mean the front of the classroom. For some students, preferential seating may be in the back where they can get up and move and not be a distraction. And then parents, if you are offered small group, make sure you ask, where does small group take place? What is the number that you consider small group? Sometimes we think, okay, small group may be 3, but really it's 10. So think about your student, think about where they can be successful. And small group, I'm suggesting maybe small group testing, that they're not necessarily testing with the whole class, that they're going to be pulled out and tested in a small group environment. But ask the question, what does small group look like? What does extended time look like? That could be time and a half. It could be double time. So it really depends. It also depends on the student. If you have a student that has difficulty, whether it's with fine motor or processing, and they may not be able to select A, B, C, or D, say on a standardized test, they may need to have a special accommodation so that they could speak the letter versus actually having to physically move their hand. So there's all kinds of things that students can qualify for. It's just having that conversation, and it really goes back to setting the mindset of your parent input and your present levels. And then as a parent, I always say, take a look at the things that you feel need to be worked on for your child and prioritize them so that it's not this overwhelm of huge document and then it kind of gets lost in translation, right? So prioritize their needs. It is, remember, an IEP is a fluid document. So you can always go back and make adjustments as needed throughout that cycle of that IEP. The final P that we're talking about today is provider and service hours. So you think about this as you come together, parent input, and the progress of the student within the school setting. That is going to be our needs. That's going to help us define our needs. Needs drive goals and services. Services, I'm talking about occupational therapy, physical therapy, guidance, counseling, and then also the support that a student may receive from a special educator. If a child is in a general education setting, always ask who are the providers, because sometimes as parents, we are not sure of who is going to be in charge of collecting the data for different goals. So always ask that question, who is in charge of collecting the data, and then list whatever goals. That way, you know, as a parent, who you can reach out to if you have questions on that goal. It may be the general ed teacher is the educator of record. It may be the special educator. It may be the guidance counselor, whomever that may be. As a parent, I would ask who's providing the services and where are the services taking place so that you are fully aware of what is in this IEP and how it's going to look when it becomes an active IEP for your child. I think that wraps it up. And our four P's, so parent input, present level, progress, meaning goals and accommodations, provider and service hours. There's other elements that come into an IEP, but those are really the broad, strong standing points. So thanks for tuning in to the Special Ed Strategist podcast. Again, I'm your host, Wendy Taylor. I hope you found this episode informative and empowering. Remember, as a parent, you play that crucial role in ensuring your kiddo receives the support they need to thrive academically, socially, and emotionally. That intricate dance in that IEP and that conversation. But at the end, it's all about communication and collaboration to ensure the success of all of our kiddos. Be sure to subscribe for more episodes and join us next time as we continue to explore topics related to special education and parent advocacy. Until next time, take care and keep advocating for your kiddos' success. Bye for now.